Okay, welcome to this interview where I am going to be talking all about the juice, OJ Simpson. And I am joined by Devon Tracy, aka Atheism is Unstoppable. Devon, how are you, sir?
Better, but I'm going to keep it authentic with you. The one thing I enjoy about my day is that I'm talking to you. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure to have you. So let's crack straight into it. I'd like to spend a little bit of time, maybe 20 minutes, maybe 40 minutes, see how it goes, talking about the actual details of the case itself. But most of the conversation, or a good half of it or more, I'd like to talk around it, because I know there's so much to be said around the case, not just the details of itself. Because it's a slam dunk that he was guilty, in my opinion. It's 100%, not 99.9. Like there's a physical possibility that there's any doubt. No, 100% in my opinion. So before I let you go, I want to ask you your sort of personal connection to it, because you've got a very good one. But just before you do that, I'll give you my much lamer personal connection to it, because we're both old enough to remember it in our lives. I was 14, 15 at the time. The thing lasted like 11 months. And I'd just been given a TV in my bedroom, a little sort of 12, 14 inch box TV. You know, those old 90s cubes that weighed a ton. I was allowed one in my bedroom at that age, and they were showing it on British TV, like really late at night, 1-2 in the morning or something, on BBC Two or Channel Four or something. And I followed it. I followed it pretty much religiously. It broke my sleep patterns forever. but I got to sort of know Judge Ito, and I just sort of got to know all the characters in it and everything. So that's my connection to it. I remember it very clearly. I remember following it as nearly every night, it seemed. But you've got a much, much closer connection to it. So could you tell us all about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole world knows. And I think the first thing to say is, if you were alive during the time, especially if you, I mean, you seem to be on the cusp where you were young, but you were actually interested in it. If you were an adult at that time, it consumed the media. It was everything. You have to remember, and that needs to be explained now, this is before the internet. The internet was not in existence. And what that meant was you had stupid reruns on television, you had movies in the theaters, but we were wide open for content and we were totally able to be obsessed with the story. And so it was a soap opera, it was an obsession, it was a money-making entity, which was kind of vile and disgusting. And so we consumed it on a daily basis. I happen to be from Los Angeles. I happen to have lived in Brentwood. I went to junior high school in Brentwood. My town is immediately adjacent to Brentwood. We're talking about a place that is, you know, 10 minutes away from where I was raised. And I went to the court case only because my step uncle is a lawyer for the city of LA. And he's like, hey, do you want to come see the case? Like you said, this trial dragged on and on. And it's not that glamorous. It was actually boring as hell, to the point I remember falling asleep. I think I actually fell asleep like a horse sitting upright. Mind-numbingly boring. But I was there during the closing arguments, and I happened to be sitting next to Richard Dreyfuss, who happened to be there studying for a role, also just because he was interested, because it was a fascinating pop cultural event. And so that's why the camera was focused on us. It wasn't like, oh, there's Devon Tracy. Although that would be interesting if it ever did that. Instead, we made the news that forever now it is as this dude was at the trial. But it didn't even matter. Everyone knows everything about this case, or should, and about the extra stuff that you know, the analysis, the, like, how people think about it now is as relevant as back then. Because just the basics of it, a guy killed two people, is really the stage one of this. But there's multiple stages that need to be discussed and analyzed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So yeah, there's a great picture of you sitting next to Richard Dreyfuss in the courtroom. Amazing, really. So it's very close to home. I mean, it's a local story to you. As you say, you couldn't really have been more close to the thing. But yeah, it was worldwide, even in Britain, we absolutely followed it. And yeah, like you say, there's basically no internet, or not in a popular sense anyway. And mobile phones had been out since the 80s, but hardly anyone had them, even in the mid 90s. That was just sort of when people would very start to have them.
You know what people had at the time? Pagers. Ron Goldman had a pager and was found in the crime scene. OJ, being a rich guy, he did have a cell phone, and his excuse for why there was blood all over his car, the interior of his car, was because he was, quote, searching for his cell phone. And he had blood on him because he had cut himself looking for golf clubs. His story changed as to why he had blood on himself. Originally, he said, I cut myself in Chicago. Then he realized, holy shit, that excuse is not going to help me because I'm sure to have leaked blood all over Los Angeles. So the story I came up with about how I cut my finger needs to go back in time to Los Angeles.
Okay, so let's do a little bit of the details of the case. So, I mean, we could talk about this for hours, and there's loads of documentaries about it for hours and hours and hours, but I suppose to do sort of an abbreviated version is like the blood, really. There's OJ's blood is dripping from the scene of the murder. It's on the back gate of her house. It's all over the inside and outside of his car. Both his blood and both of theirs blood is on the inside and outside of his car. It's on his socks in his house because he cut his finger. That's a key thing. Sorry, right. go ahead.
Well, let's slow down here because you're rolling over this in a speedy way as if to suggest that what you're saying is commonplace or normal. When you talk about evidence in a murder case, and I'm watching a really good documentary about this right now, and in that documentary, the lead investigator said, I have never seen so much evidence in a criminal case as I did. This is the ultimate amount of evidence I've ever witnessed in my life. It's the same as 10 other murder cases, all compiled into one. Sometimes when you talk about evidence, the word circumstantial gets brought into it. And people, when they hear that word, the connotation of that word is a very weak one. It's like, oh, it's just circumstantial evidence. Not understanding that when you have multiple points of circumstantial evidence, it is completely and totally damning. So just because you don't have a video, a circumstantial evidence is powerful. It is, I mean, it's everything. You come to the scene after the fact and you have to piece the puzzle together. But circumstantial evidence in this case was, I mean, mind-blowing. But we're not even talking about that right now. We're talking about forensic evidence. So you're talking about the dawn of DNA, but blood. So this is not a perfect crime. This is a crime of passion, of rage. The dude bled everywhere. And what you're talking about, blood on the gate, blood leading away from the crime scene, blood in his car, blood on OJ's driveway, which is a house that's 5-minute drive away. That's OJ's blood because, damn it, he cut his finger. Now, he cut his finger, the speculation is, because Ron Goldman, in his defense of trying to not die, ripped off one of his gloves. And so OJ, with his right hand, he's a right-handed guy, cut his left hand. His left hand was being used to grapple with Ron Goldman as he killed him. So the dude was leaking, and we know it's his blood to the tune of 9.7 billion, I believe, are the odds. So it's absolutely his blood, and these are fresh blood droplets. It's not like minute amounts leading away from the crime scene. In particular, they are on the left side of his body. So we have his footprints, which we can talk about the Bruno Mali shoes, which are, that's another, I might just do a whole video on those shoes and those footprints, but it's, you know, the same size shoe as OJ. He had that pair of shoes. This is an Italian luxury brand of shoe, very particular. Do you know, guess how many pairs of those shoes were sold in America in 1994?
Very few, I imagine.
Give me I mean, this is a rich man's shoe. It costs several hundred dollars, if not thousand, to buy this pair. The amount was 299 pairs in all of America. Now, then you factor in this. How many people wear size 12 shoes? You might not be familiar with our sizing out in America, but that's a large man's shoe. And the percentage is 9%. 9% of people wear size 12 shoes. So you factor those two things together, it's an unbelievable damning set of facts against OJ. But the blood droplets leading away from the crime were on the left side of those footprints, meaning the person who did this killing was injured on his left side of his body. OJ had an open wound, massive knife wound on his left hand. So this is the beginning of explaining to you, but continue. You speak to what I just said because there's so much more to talk about with the blood.
Yeah, so to say, the droplets of blood they found on the walkway were able to say it was likely to be OJ's to the tune of about 170 million to one. the blood on the gate was like more like, as you say, 9 billion to 1, and that's more than there are people in the world. In other words, it's 100% guaranteed slam dunk, it's his blood. There's no possibility it's not his blood, right?
But we also have mixtures of blood, which is far more compelling, and which is, you know, case closed, we can all go home when you understand the following. Ron Goldman's blood, and yes, Nicole Brown Simpson's blood and Ron Goldman's blood were found in OJ's car.
That's it, right? That's it.
Good night. Bye bye, guys. Yeah. And on his socks. So they found his socks in his bedroom, at his home, at his mansion. This is not Nicole's place, OJ's home. On those socks is Ron Goldman's blood and Nicole's blood. Now, you could try to make some bullshit story about, well, they used to be married, and so, you know, married couples always bleeding on each other, you know, women with their periods and whatnot. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy.
OJ had never met Ron Goldman before that evening, right?
No, absolutely not. Right. So this, I don't even know why, like, because at the time, DNA was literally a new concept and the public was just being introduced to it. People weren't watching crime shows that talked about DNA. DNA was in its fledgling state, especially when it comes to criminal cases. So the certainty that this presents in this case, looking back now, it's like comical. Like, what were people thinking back then? But then again, what are people thinking now? Because in a minute, I'm going to tell you, I found some new poll results that they took this year, and it's shocking. The percentage of people that think he's guilty or innocent today will floor you.
So there's him, Ron Goldman's, and Nicole's blood everywhere, inside his house, inside and outside his car. All that is just an absolute, I call it a slam dunk. But there's the hat and the gloves. He dropped his hat there that had his hair in it. There's the gloves on it. I mean, it's just he absolutely did it. It's just, there's no doubt.
Okay, so there's a glove at the crime scene. The second glove is found at his house. This is the infamous, I mean, it's just one part of this. We're not even talking about the gloves yet. Yeah, but yes, right. The hair is also completely insane. It's a black man's hair found in the beanie found at the crime scene. So in the struggle, in the fight, shit got torn off, namely his hat and one of his gloves. In fact, as he was walking away, he stopped. He didn't run away, by the way. He walked away. And as he walked away, you could see with the footprints that he hesitated and turned. And
should I go back and get my hat and gloves?
Exactly. But it's very dark. And, you know, there are people in the neighborhood and this is not good to be seen here. So he thought, you know what? I got to get out of here. And he walked away. But the hair, this shows us that we're talking about a black man. There's a black man that did this. So just add that to the stack of other circumstantial evidence. But, you know, we could also talk motive, which is a whole other segment.
Well, one other little thing I'd like to say. A black man wearing size 12 Bruno Marlies.
Yes, exactly. Compounding, right.
And they could tell that from the footprint that, he was walking. He wasn't up on his toes running. There's one particular, and he stabbed her in the neck a bunch of times. Then he stabbed up Goldman a bunch of times. Then he returned to her and cut her throat so deeply, almost decapitated her. And then he goes back and cuts Ron Goldman's throat. And so, but one little, it's only a small little detail, but for me, I don't know why sometimes little details of things.
I believe just British paint people call picture. They call this a niggle.
Yeah. That as he walked away for the final time, he trod on her back, walked across her back.
He did.
And there's a big Bruno Marley 512 print on her back in blood. For me, I don't know why, because that out of everything that happened in that moment in time, it's one of the least brutal. But there's something about that which
that offends
is just,
you more than the decapitation?
No. But right. But you get what I'm saying. There's something about that which is particularly just
I scoffed at that as well. It's terrible. But I think what it was basically a wellness check. It was, is this person still alive? You know, but the disregard for but obviously he has no regard. He hated her. He was insanely jealous and he was acting in a primal state of rage. But really, to condemn OJ is so easy because it's like you see what the guy did, you judge him on his actions. But the wake of this, the legacy of this, is everyone else who gets it wrong. And what excuse do they have? You know, like, I don't want to do any charity for OJ here, but the guy was clearly out of control and his emotions were, you know, overwhelming him. So he's a flawed human being who's an evil prick. But again, where's the excuse for the millions of other people who are giving this a pass or not savvy enough to acknowledge what happened here? Where's their moral compass? Like, how do they sleep at night? And is it ignorance or is it evil or is it both? So but look, let's talk more blood, because it's not only in the car. He drives his car back to his home. He's late to get to his limo. He parks the car in a very haphazard way. That's what the limo driver said. It was at a steep angle into the curb. He gets out. We see blood from his car out into the driveway of his home. There's blood droplets. So he's literally, this is like following breadcrumbs. And then up into his bedroom where he changed clothes, and we find the bloody sock there. But to get into his house, he goes out by Cato Kalin. So enter into the scene Cato Kalin, his house guest who's living in the guest house in the back, who wakes up or hears three loud noises at a very specific time, like a 10:45, somewhere around there. And the guy had hit the air conditioner. He hit this external unit that's jutting out of this alley. And then bam, he drops the other glove. And he's panicking. You know, his adrenaline's got to be flowing. He's in a hurry. He's got to get to the limo driver to have his alibi, to get away with this, get out to Chicago. And so the whole thing comes together. And I don't know if many people know these basic facts of this case. It's been lost in history, and especially people now. So the study that I showed, that the people who think he's innocent skew young. So the younger you are, the more likely you think that he's innocent, which, you know, younger people skew stupid and ignorant. So just generally, this is, God. But I mean, we are just beginning to outline why people know he did this. This, we're not even talking about his history of violence against this woman, domestic abuse.
Well, or I mean, let's just quickly touch on that then, that it was documented that for years he had been abusive, had beaten her up, and she'd been on the phone to the cops. There's lots of evidence that he abused her and beat her and things, and they were divorced, but he wouldn't leave her alone, right?
Yeah, he was stalking her. He was obsessed. He had a lot of sexual jealousy, and it's weird because, you know, he had a ton of women. He was a real player in that way, and he had girlfriends and whatnot, but there was something about the betrayal in his mind that his wife, the mother of his children, was off with some other guy. It didn't sit well with him. And so he was abusive, and we have the 911 calls. We have the pictures of Nicole. This went on for years, and she predicted her own murder. She said, he's going to kill me. When her sister found out about it, about her sister being killed, she said, oh my God, he finally did it. Like, everyone knows OJ did this. And it's such a sad tale. And this actually dovetails right into the jury selection, which the whole case could, the reason why he was found guilty was because of the jury. Now that's a literal statement, but it's also in the sense that those jurors were picked specifically based off their demographics. They studied them, they polled people in these demographics, and they knew that black women and people of color in general were going to think favorably about OJ. They did, they had a positive outlook on the guy. And so now we're tapping into race relations, but go ahead.
Well, just before we get onto the trial, there's one other thing I wanted to ask, talk to you about, mention. Something you touched on there, that the other people's moral compass. I remember Patrice O'Neill, who I really quite liked and thought was a very funny person. He was one of those people who sort of kind of went with his tongue in his cheek, but kind of not, would sort of try and insist that OJ wasn't guilty. But there's lots of people that did that. But what I wanted to ask you about is this idea of, well, how to put it? Okay. I think that lots of people in the world have struggled sort of passing reality, sort of have struggled understanding what is or isn't real. And they get distracted by just complete nonsense. So, for example, there's the conspiracy theory that O.J. Simpson's grown-up son had done it. And there's a couple of other conspiracy theories that try and piece together another story, some sort of other story. And it's just nonsense. It's like the idea that the, for example, maybe the World Trade Centers were hit by an orbital energy weapon. It's just, it's just, okay, you're not looking at the evidence. You're not being serious. You're not, you failed to understand reality. If you're honestly, seriously trying to make those arguments, you're not looking at it properly. You failed to sort of understand reality. And where, and you know, if you want to say a word or two about that, because that's quite prevalent. You see it all the time, don't you?
I think the question that comes to my mind is, why did that story please you better than reality? Like, what is it doing for you that you are believing that? Because there are reasons. The OJ son did it is truly ridiculous. I guess theoretically what they're trying to get away with is the blood would be the same in the son. I don't even think that that's true, but he had no motive to do this. And also there's no evidence that he did do it. Apparently his alibi wasn't super strong, but like my alibi wasn't super strong. I couldn't even tell you where I was that night. That's not a case against someone. Someone said he was mad. He was jealous of his stepmother because she didn't show up for some party he had invited her to. Like, it was just something completely crazy and it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So when it comes to people's inability to ascertain reality, it makes me, it's obvious, by the way, you're discussing a pattern that is so prevalent. What it makes me think about is, I don't think they care on some deep fundamental level. I see, because you and I, we operate under the assumption that it matters what is real, but I don't think that's established. And I don't know how deep into psychology we need to get, but like, this taps into religion and the religious debate. And, you know, atheists would, we would talk to religious people under the assumption that they care about what is true and that there's an integrity and a pride and a certain honor in living in accordance with reality. When in actuality, in practice, most people don't. They live with lies about themselves, lies about the world. They're willfully ignorant on a multitude of things, including, for example, our own mortality. Most people aren't really grappling with our place in the universe and the finite nature of our existence. And there are certain reasons for that. But it's like, aside from some scientific nerds, who cares about reality? What has reality ever done for you? What is the truth? How does it serve you? I understand that you feel good if you believe certain stories. I understand that that's real to you. And that reality, the reality of you feeling good because you believe certain stories, is more powerful, means more to you than what actually happened. So like, I just saw a woman on Al Jazeera, a Japanese woman, young journalist, quote unquote, and she was doing a story about Hiroshima and Nagasaki and how horrible it was and how America needs to apologize for that. And it was a war crime. And isn't it terrible? And like, no mention of the 40 million people Japan murdered in like an 8-year period, or all of their war crimes, okay, including war crimes against Americans, POWs, etc., all the rape, all the just, you know, straight up genocide that they committed. She didn't mention that. Now, do you think she cares about all that? Or does that story not make her happy? It doesn't honor or celebrate her heritage as a Japanese woman. She likes the story, Japanese people victims, bad guy, Western world, America. That makes her happy. So the power of narrative, the power of story, is just completely trumps the power of people who care about history, guys like you and I, which is to say, we care about what's real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. I'm more interested in what's true or real than sort of anything else, really. For every lie that's told, you incur a debt to the truth. I think that's quite a good line, and the truth nearly all has a way of nearly always coming out, and you can only fool yourself for so long. You can only sort of deny reality for so long. Absolutely. And as a historian, even I, as a complete armchair amateur historian, just a fan of history, still getting that sense of what is real and what isn't, what really happened and what didn't, or if you can't ever really know, what's more likely to have happened. And just one last thing, we just quickly say, in the OJ case, it's just there's no way it couldn't have been him. You talk about circumstantial evidence. There's the idea of exculpatory evidence, i.e. any bit of evidence that might point to not being him. And there's none. There's none. Right?
I know.
Sorry, you go.
I know. No, no, that's it's a great point. It's an amazing point. You talk about being an armchair historian, and it is an impressive armchair you're sitting in. It is bigger than you. I would call it a throne. You're sitting in a throne. It's very much like Game of Thrones. In fact, you have a sword, a literal sword, right behind your chair with the British flag, or I guess that's some sort of, is it? Am I looking at the British flag, or did I just make that up?
Yeah, no, no, it's the Union flag. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay. So, I mean, it's a very intimidating thing you have there. I wouldn't be surprised if you have some sort of an air pump that rises up about 10 inches to make yourself be that much more dominant to the person you're talking to.
We want to make the chair hover, something like the Baron Harkonnen can hover around, move around.
No, exactly. Why is that the guy from Dune?
Yeah, the baddie, the arch fat baddie.
Why is he so? Why is he so fat? What happened there?
Well, he's just degenerate in every level. And in the 60s, when Frank Herbert wrote it, it was okay to sort of make out that if you were a sexual degenerate and obese, that reflected that you were morally corrupt. That's all that is. That's the only reason why. But anyway.
Yeah, it's funny though, because people's looks don't always sync up with their internal caliber or their goodness level. You know, and OJ is one of these guys where he was so charming and so likable. And when he wasn't murdering people, he was just the most likable guy. And so that's what made people sort of not understand or be willing to accept that this is even possible. But I had asked the question, you go.
I was just saying, if there's any sort of zoomers out there and anyone doesn't know, wasn't old enough or has forgotten, he was a hero, darling, in the very late 60s through most of the 70s. He was one of the greatest American football players, the Juice. I can't remember where he played. I can't remember what he was, but he ran a
running
lot, right?
Back.
He rushed. He was a running back, right? He rushed for loads of yards, and he was great at what he did. And then he went on to do loads of adverts, and then be a sports commentator. And he was even in a few films. He was in sort of the Leslie Nielsen films.
Naked Gun, right?
Yeah, Naked Gun.
But
yeah.
He's a terrible actor. I mean, those films are good, but
acting.
Yeah, he would do anything. He was doing like workout videos, you know, just anything to make a buck. The guy was like, he's kind of a low class, just sort of greedy punk. And in those workout videos, by the way, he was doing one thing where it was like a step touch, side to side aerobics, and you're swinging your arm like left and then right. And he goes, oh, this is when your wife makes you mad. And he does a little joke, like a little wife punching joke in the middle of those things, which was freaking crazy to me. But yeah, OJ, to equate it to a person today, it would be like Charles Barkley being accused of murdering his wife. Charles Barkley is one of the greatest NBA players of all time. He's a great commentator. He's a public personality. He's beloved. If it came out tomorrow that Barkley had killed someone, most people wouldn't believe it, just on its face. They would not accept it. Right. So that's the kind of guy he was. And he ruined it. He ruined his whole life. Well, that's the framing that actually I think the New York Times just put out. OJ ruined his life, like not mentioning he also killed two people. The news coverage of this death of OJ has been atrocious. Social media, obviously, a shit show, but I think there was four black anchors on CBS Morning News, and they did a segment, and they did a video called, I'm not joking with you, The Complicated Legacy of OJ Simpson.
It's not complicated. It's not complicated. No. It's very straightforward. Yeah. Disgusting. Disgusting, right? I mean,
Oh, my God.
What kind of world are we living in? What degenerated age are we living in, Devin? It's
I know. But this, to me, is the baseline. This is the origin story of AIU, my YouTube, and my sort of delving into commentating on the world, but also on issues of morality, you know, issues of right and wrong. If we can't get this right, we're hopeless. There's no point. So for me, I almost want to come back to this and say, just kind of drag people's head. And it's like when your dog takes a crap on your couch, you got to take their face and shove it into the poo to say, no, this is bad. They're not understanding that they're wrong. And I don't know if I'm willing to give them a pass. Because if you were trying to be kind to them, you might say they're low information. They haven't studied this. They don't know about the blood. They don't know about the evidence. But it's like, I don't even know if that's an excuse at this point. On this issue, it's a massive story.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.